Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Whiffed out the test, it's going to be multiple choice. It's very easy. You'll love it, it'll be fun. I was going to tell you all the questions. I've been advised best not to. Make you study more. I may give a few hints. Hope you don't mind. Do you mind? No problem. Okay, that's great. Yeah, well, I would say if you take the time to read Ishopanishad a couple of times, which wouldn't take that long, a few hours, then you should be able to answer all the questions pretty easily. You've got to learn those four verses, which we already told you, Invocation, Mantra 1, Mantra 5, Mantra 15, in Sanskrit and English. And then there's 34 other questions. Yeah. Multiple choice. Anyway, maybe at the end we'll give you a few little hints on some of them. So today, though, we're going to do mantras 9, 10, and 11, and we have to finish all of them because we don't have a lot of time left. So let us start by reciting the mantras. Yeah. So first of all, mantra 9. In mantra 9, the speaker makes an interesting point that ignorant people who are, we would say, like mudhas, if you know that verse, Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, verse 15, how does that verse start? Sorry? 7:15. Namam duskritamo mudha prapajyante naradama mayaya parita jnana asuram bhavam ashrita. So Lord Krishna is explaining there the four types of people who don't surrender to him. And the first class is mudhas, means your simple materialist, basically. He's got no aspirations materially or spiritually, just ready to work and earn a living and subsist, and that is really as far as his interest goes. For such a person, certainly is in ignorance. So an ignorant person will go to the darkest region of ignorance, the speaker is saying. But even worse are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So he's speaking in somewhat figurative terms, we could say. If you can imagine a place which is worse than the darkest region of ignorance. Like, on the spiritual platform we have concepts. The concept, it's explained actually in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Perfect, more perfect, most perfect, and even more perfect. And even more perfect than that, and there's actually no end. So, it doesn't really apply in material existence. But I think the point that he's trying to get at is that someone who's really ignorant and just completely absorbed in materialistic life, they really go down. But even worse are people who are like, who are really endeavoring in very specialized ways in material existence. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how your average... Does anyone have to mark themselves present still, or did everyone already? Everyone mark themselves? Okay. I must say, this is the most consistent class I've ever had. everyone is always here. It's amazing. I mean, it's really amazing. Anyway, that's good. I suppose some of you have to be here doing this preacher's training course. So Prabhupada talks about how people, on page 45, the mudhas, top of page 45, mudhas, another, you can translate the word mudha to mean just like a simple fool, which is the general sort of understanding, just your simple everyday fool, who hasn't got any brains really by any standards and just can't get it together, so he's just kind of hanging in there in material life. So another translation of the word mudha, or application perhaps, is ass, donkey. There's one, as I walk down every day, there's one man who is moving a big pile of sand using donkeys, and he always says Hare Krishna to me as I walk past. And I look at the donkeys, and they're just standing there. They're really... The concept of a stupid person being like a donkey is really quite appropriate. They're carrying these terrible weights of sand in this case. The other day we were at Govardhan and one came past, you may have noticed, with tons of cow dung. There was more, in terms of the volume, there was more cow dung than him. And he was just going on, just looking down and just carrying on. So the Prabhupada says the ass is a symbol of stupidity. Those who simply engage in the profitless pursuit of sense gratification are worshipping avidya, according to Shirsha Upanishad. Then Prabhupada goes on to say that those who play the role of helping this sort of civilization in the name of educational advancement are actually doing more harm than those who are on the platform of gross sense gratification, than the mudhas. And Prabhupada gives a very interesting example to illustrate. Advancement of learning by a godless people is as dangerous as a valuable jewel on the hood of a cobra. So the person who is just the simple mudha, just trying to gratify his or her senses, they're compared to a cobra here. And meaning it's a very dangerous situation, and they're going to fall down into lower species, actually, as time goes on. But when the cobra has a jewel on the head, the cobra is even more dangerous. Because, not actually in a sense that the cobra is more dangerous, but in effect, he's more dangerous because he looks more attractive. You see the jewel and think, oh, very nice, look at that. So you become attracted more than if it's just an ordinary, everyday cobra. And you may then approach the cobra thinking, gosh, what a nice jewel, let me try and get it if I can. So these intellectual materialists, they are capable because they have more brain, but their brain is on the material level. So with their big brains, they make material life appear to be very, very attractive, more attractive than it is. And they give great hope that, yes, if you do this, then, you know, so many wonderful things will happen. If you take this course, or if you get this job, or pursue this career, then your life is going to become wonderful, and in this way people become very optimistic, and they go more deeply into material life than if they were just subsisting, just working to get a loaf of bread at the end of the day so they can have a meal and a roof over their head. So those very kind of optimistic and progressive go-ahead materialists who are into attempting at least to exploit the material situation with their intelligence, through their education, then they're even worse than the simple materialist, because they glamorize material life. And you know, like here in India, the average person, if they get thirsty, they drink some water. But in the Western world, because, you know, they're very intelligent people behind big business, so you see the advertisements for Coca-Cola or something like that, and then you think that you need to buy a bottle of Coca-Cola. So in this way, you know, material life gets developed and the whole scene of material existence develops and you get more involved and more entangled, and actually you end up in a more worse situation. So that's really the bottom line here, that's the point. Prabhupada goes on to talk about decorating a dead body. A dead body is a dead body. And if you just leave it there, people will see, gosh, it's a dead body, and not be very attracted. But Prabhupada goes on to talk about decorating a dead body. And people see the decorated dead body, and it's more attractive. But actually, it's the same dead body. So similarly, material existence is like a dead body. It has nothing to offer. And you don't want to get too involved in it. So if you stay on the simple living level, particularly if it's simple living and high thinking, but even if you just stay on the simple living level, then you're not going to get as heavily implicated as if you try to really get into it in a big way. So there, Srila Prabhupada then goes on to talk about, so the mudas, that's one thing. Then he goes on to talk about particularly two types of people who fit into the category of those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. Of course, overall, this Mantra 9 is expanding the concept put forward in Mantra 4. I should have mentioned that at the beginning. I mean Mantra 3, rather. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. So in Mantra 9 and further on in Mantra 12, the speaker is going to elaborate on these people who are the killers of the soul. So here there are two main types, those who are just ignorant and those who are involved in the culture of materialistic knowledge. Then when we consider the second category, those who are cultivating materialistic knowledge, Prabhupada particularly talks about two types. And one of them, Prabhupada discusses from the top of page 46, Veda, Vada, Rata. And the other category is towards the bottom of page 47. You should note these down for the test. That's a hint. Down towards the bottom of page 47. What is it? 8 lines up at the top of the last paragraph. The Mayaya Parita Jnana class. So there are two types being referred to here, particularly, or described here, of these people who are cultivating knowledge, and in that way deepening their implication in material life. And Prabhupada, the way he talks about both of them, you'll see he really doesn't like them. He really gets on their case most extremely heavily. When Prabhupada first came to America, he was in 26 Second Avenue, and the devotees heard him talking about every class, practically every class, he talk about the Mayavadis and get on their case very heavily. And of course the devotees in those days didn't know what a Mayavadi was. So they're wondering, who are these Mayavadis? They're obviously like bogus spiritualists of some sort. But they didn't really know who they were. So they were thinking that if Swamiji really feels he must get on the cases of some bogus spiritualists, why doesn't he get on the case of the Christians and point out their defects? Why these Mayavadis? What have they got to do with anything? And one devotee hypothesized, well, Swamiji is an elderly gentleman, and elderly people, sometimes they get little bees under their bonnets about certain things. So maybe he had a bad experience with one of these Mayavadis, and now he's got like a pet hate towards them. But it's not exactly that. They're actually very dangerous. So these Veda Vada Rita people are very dangerous, and Srila Prabhupada really gets on their case in quite a big way. They are actually, I don't know if any of you are familiar with the various organizations which have spun off from the Vedic culture, kind of like deviant groups. Well, there's one called Arya Samaj, and actually Srila Prabhupada is really talking about the Arya Samaj here, particularly. And they're people who are into the four Vedas, they're not into the Puranas. Prabhupada actually makes that point here in the bottom paragraph on page 46. He says that sometimes they even condemn the Puranas, which are authentic Vedic explanations for laymen. And they concentrate on the four Vedas. And the four Vedas we mentioned right at the beginning, you may remember, they're Karmakandya, essentially. Other than the Upanishads, which are a relatively small part of the four Vedas. But the balance is purely Karmakandya, means how to go to the higher planets and enjoy more through demigod worship and sacrifice and all that sort of thing. So that's what these Veda Vada Rita people are into. Prabhupada says in that same paragraph at the bottom of page 46, he's explained that the Vedas are to help us go back to Godhead, but the Veda Vada Rita people, instead of realizing the purport of the Vedas, take it for granted that side issues, such as the attainment of heavenly pleasure for sense gratification, the lust for which causes their material bondage in the first place, are the ultimate end of the Vedas. So this is what the Veda Vada Rita people are all about, going to the heavenly planets. And in order to kind of reinforce their position and solidify their position, Prabhupada explains at the bottom of the page and going over to the top of 47, that they establish their own paramparas. They declare some member of their group to be the Jagat Guru. He may be a guru a spiritual sort of, or religious head of some sort at least, and have a certain number of followers in India. But, you know, it's taking a little far to say that he's Jagat Guru. But they do like this, and they glorify him. So they engage in the study of the Vedas, but they misinterpret the Vedas in very materialistic terms, and they establish a whole institution based on that. That's the Veda Vada Rita people. And Prabhupada says in the second paragraph on page 47, at the bottom of that paragraph, they even Vedas at all, the simple mudhas, who are just living from day to day. Then the Mayaya Paritajnana people, they're more like Mayavadis, impersonalists, that sort of thing. Or the particular thing they're into is declaring people to be God, creating avatars. They declare all sorts of different people God. Mayaya Paritajnana. Of course, they don't think, how is it that God has become entangled in illusion? And when their so-called God is not capable of disentangling himself from illusion, they say that his illusory position is his pastime. Yes. He is, eating meat and having illicit sex and taking intoxication, actually because he can't control his senses. That's the fact. But they say it's his lila, So these self-made gods or creator of gods, creators of gods, they are the Maya Karita Jnanas. So there are other categories, but these two are particularly discussed here. And their situation, their future is worse than the simple materialists. Then in Mantra 10, it's quite interesting. Of course, the verse is making a point which we would say is pretty much self-evident, that the wise, dhiranam, the sober people, wise people, have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nescience. So Srila Prabhupada then, on pages 49 and 50, he gives a very elaborate description of what the process of knowledge or the process of the culture of knowledge entails based on Krishna's statements in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So the culture of knowledge doesn't just mean that you sit down and read a lot of books like that, or you get your Bhakti Shastri degree. And when the Yama Dutas come at the end of your life, you hold up your Bhakti Shastri degree and say, hang on, I got my Bhakti Shastri degree. So what are you guys doing here? Anyway, I'm sure they won't come, but because you're all sincere devotees. But it's not just a matter of book knowledge. No, it's a culture. It's a way of life. It's a whole orientation of existence, actually. And in that context, real knowledge can manifest, can be understood first of all, can be assimilated, and then can be manifested in terms of practical activity. Yeah. So it's a culture, it's a way of life. This is what we're referring to here. So therefore it involves many things, including reading books, actually, but not only reading books. So Prabhupada lists out 18, I think, 18 things. Number one, you have to be a perfect gentleman. In other words, you have to learn etiquette, how to behave yourself. Sometimes, anyway, you have to learn how to behave yourself. We have to learn how to behave ourselves. Most of us are coming from Western backgrounds and we don't really know how to behave ourselves so well. That's why sometimes some of the Indian people, they get a little shocked when they see some of our devotees kind of roaring with laughter in public and hanging out and drinking cool drinks and things like this, kind of flopping around a bit. But we have to learn etiquette, how to conduct ourselves as gentlemen and gentle ladies. Then number two, one should be humble. Three, one should be non-violent or offenseless. Four, one should be forbearing or one should be tolerant. Number five, one should be simple, not duplicitous. Duplicitous means two. You're saying one thing or doing one thing, but actually in your heart the reality is that you are situated in another position and you're just, you know, hypocrisy like that. So simplicity means you're very straightforward and honest. So you need to be like that. Then number six, of course, this is more directly connected with knowledge. Other things also, but it's more directly connected with knowledge, approaching a spiritual master. Then you have to learn from him and ask questions, but you also have to serve. It's not just that you turn up for the class and that is all there is to it. You have to serve him and dedicate yourself to him like that. Number seven, you have to follow regulative principles. Number eight, you have to be steady. Number nine, you have to be self-controlled, one-pointed in mind. about where you're going in your spiritual life. Number 10, you have to be austere, or at least not extravagant, not self-indulgent, at least moderate in your habits as far as your bodily existence is concerned. Number 11, you have to not be on the bodily platform. That requires some knowledge as such. Number 12, of course, this is taken from Bhagavad Gita. And here Krishna says, Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha nadarshanam. That you should be convinced about birth, death, old age, and disease. The evil, he says, the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease. That requires some knowledge. Number 13, I guess that means austere again, or moderate at the very least. 14, one shouldn't become entangled in household affairs. 15, you have to be equipoised. 16, you should become a pure devotee, or at least be very seriously following the process which will lead you to become a pure devotee. 17, good association, living in a suitable place, a holy place, like living in a temple, or if you're living at home, you should make your home a temple, that sort of idea, and no bad association. And 18, you should be self-realized, this is obviously more to do with knowledge also, seriously interested in understanding the knowledge. So all these things, they're all components of the culture of knowledge. That's why, like for our Bhakti Shastri degree, the way I think about it, is that, you know, devotees should wait, or at least there should be some component, somehow or other, if possible, in the whole conception of getting a Bhakti Shastri degree, of the devotee's actual spiritual standing, rather than just like the academic aspect, which obviously is important. Yeah. So these 18 factors, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, that these are knowledge, or the culture of knowledge, like the whole sort of environment and world of knowledge, and anything contrary to this is ignorance. Krishna says this in the 13th chapter, having described these, and actually Prabhupada makes the point at the bottom of page 50, these 18 items by which real knowledge can be developed. But for these, all other methods are considered to be in the category of nescience. And then, of course, Prabhupada goes on to talk about nescience in the context of the modern-day educational system of universities and so on and so forth, technologically based education, and how this is not very good. In fact, it's really a matter of nescience. Just one interesting point. As far as this culture of knowledge is concerned, how important these factors are, like humility, tolerance, etiquette, and being equipoised, and so on, is concerned. Like we mentioned, we've been talking last couple of days about the Mahabhagavats. So they don't hate, they don't lament, they don't get into anxiety. Even though they're being confronted with situations which by material standards people would normally respond in those ways. But they don't. Because of their Krishna consciousness, they're equipoised. So the fact is that Krishna is there behind those things. And knowledge means to see life in terms, ultimately in terms of its relationship with Krishna. So if you don't, for example, become equipoised, then you may develop so much knowledge about, you know, how to deal with problems in life. And do this and do that. in life, deal with difficult situations. But actually those difficult situations, ultimately they're all connected with Krishna and the devotee, particularly the Mahabhagavat, but even the Majjhimadhikari, sees everything as being connected with Krishna and remains equipoised. So actually that it's necessary to be equipoised in order to have the right knowledge about the situations you're confronting. To kind of sort them out and make sense of them is another thing. But to be able to see them for what they are, you need to be equipoised. And you need to be humble to see things or to see other people as they are, to see Krishna as he is. You need to be humble. If you're not humble like your average materialist or say particularly an atheist, when you talk to them about God, they think, ah, he's a lot of nonsense. If there ever was one, he's dead. If there is still one, it seems he's incompetent because the world is such a mess and he's responsible for the world after all. So, in this way, they put God down. They're not very humble at all. They're very puffed up. But if you're very humble, like we mentioned the cobbler and the Brahmin, that story, if you're very humble like the cobbler, then you can actually understand Krishna. Even if you've got a big brain, a super brain, like Ravana, he was highly intelligent, but he couldn't understand Krishna because he wasn't humble. I mean, among other things, he wasn't humble. And other people, even just ordinary people, or say other devotees, if you're not humble, if you're proud, then you look at some other devotee and you think, just see, look at that devotee, what a twit. Something like that. You know, why is this person the temple president? Look at him. These types of ideas. But actually, if you examine devotees nicely, you'll see that basically all devotees are very nice and they have many good qualities. And, you know, there's so many nice things about them. So if you're humble, you may be able to see that and appreciate what a nice devotee this is. But if you're not humble, you're thinking that these devotees are just a lot of nonsense. Then you don't see those nice things. Means your knowledge is incomplete, actually. You follow the idea? So actually, it's not just a matter of character building as such. But actually these are components which are directly connected to how you perceive and how you understand things, including Krishna and other people like this. So this culture of knowledge is extremely vital. It's actually vital if you are to really develop, come out at the end with the right knowledge. Anyway, then Srila Prabhupada goes on to talk about nescience, how the universities are churning out all sorts of people who are very qualified at diving more deeply into material life and just going deeper and deeper and deeper and getting more implicated by being able to exploit more expertly and in this way incur more sinful reactions. So it's a very unfortunate situation. Nationalism and chauvinism have developed due to this, Prabhupada says, this culture of nescience. Anyway, then the final main point made in Mantra 10 is on page 53, top of page 53, that we should get this instruction, get direction from a dhira. A dhira is one who is not disturbed by material illusion and not just some mundane. An adhira on page 54, Prabhupada talks about adhiras. Modern politicians who pose themselves as dhiras, they may, like in India more than anywhere else, And I think Prabhupada may be referring to one rather famous example of this. A modern politician who poses himself as a dhira, or themselves as dhiras, are actually adhiras, and one cannot expect perfect knowledge from them. In Mantra 11, the speaker is making an interesting point that in order to transcend material existence, we have to learn the process of nescience and of transcendental knowledge side by side. First of all, for the first couple of pages, actually, Prabhupada talks about Hiranyakashipu, who was trying to... He's like one of the great acharyas in this line of Veda Vada Ritas or Maya Paritagyanas, this type of person, the very materialistic people. He's one of the great leaders. And he couldn't get it together to make a success of his material life. So if he couldn't, then how will you or I? You know, I mean, Hiranyakashipu, he was so extremely powerful and expert, and we're not like that at all. Prabhupada says at the bottom of page 56, the whole point here is that even Hiranyakashipu, the most powerful of materialists, could not become deathless by his various plans. What then can be accomplished by the tiny Hiranyakashipus of today, whose plans are throttled from moment to moment? So, in other words, we should get out of the whole program of nescient existence and focus on spiritual existence. But then what about this idea that we have to understand nescience? I'm sure we can all appreciate that we need to understand the spiritual reality. That's pretty clear. But to understand nescience side by side with transcendental knowledge, well, Srila Prabhupada talks about this subject in two respects. One is at the top of page 58. Right at the top, Srila Prabhupada says, the miseries of this material world serve to indirectly remind us of our incompatibility with dead matter. Intelligent living entities generally take note of these reminders and engage themselves in the culture of vidya, or transcendental knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada would say sometimes that actually in the four seed verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, the last one, the Sanskrit I forget offhand, but the verse says that you should inquire into the subject of the absolute truth both directly and indirectly, and in all places at all times. This is meant to be the focal point of our existences. So Prabhupada explains the idea of inquiring directly into the absolute truth and indirectly. Prabhupada says that directly means that you should understand Krishna and how to be Krishna conscious and how nice Krishna is and how nice Krishna consciousness is. And indirectly means that you should understand how bad material life is. So both you get a positive impetus and a negative impetus, but they're both impetuses towards spiritual life. And Prabhupada explains that if you only understand how bad material life is, then you'll tend to become an impersonalist. Nati-nati. Not this, not this. We're not interested in material life. So you just negate everything and you end up an impersonalist. And if you're only interested in how nice Krishna is, but you don't understand, you know, that I'm not this body and how I'm entangled on the bodily platform and come to be able to deal with this, then you end up a sahajiya. Yeah, you'll end up a sahajiya. Taking Krishna cheaply, just in a materially sentimental, materially emotional way, like this. So actually both are necessary. So this is one part of understanding necessary, Prabhupada is saying. We should understand the miseries of this material world, and in this way it'll become a stimulus to be more serious about Krishna consciousness. Then Srila Prabhupada goes on to say, let's see, at the bottom of page 59 is where he kind of most clearly discusses the other aspect, or another aspect of this, the necessity of understanding nescience and dealing with nescience. So he has said that we should cultivate spiritual knowledge so we can get out of the cruel hands of death. But this does not mean that all activities for the maintenance of the body should be stopped. There's no question of stopping activities, just as there's no question of wiping out one's temperature altogether when trying to recover from a disease. To make the best use of a bad bargain is the appropriate expression. The culture of spiritual knowledge necessitates the help of this body and mind. Therefore, maintenance of the body and mind is required if we are to reach our goal. So, therefore we have to have a look after our bodies and sort of be balanced, as Krishna says, yuktahara viharasya, yukta chastasya karamasu, yukta svapnasa bodhasya, yogo bhavati dukaha. That one who is moderate in his habits of eating, sleeping, working, and recreation can mitigate the pains of material existence. Not one who eats too much, of course, too materialistic, or sleeps too much, or eats or sleeps too little. No. So in this way, there's a necessity for understanding how to relate with the material energy. You know, in a philosophical sense, you have to see the defects of material life, but in another sense, you have to understand how to make the best use of a bad bargain. And if you don't understand the miseries, and you retain a too optimistic view of material life, or if you try and become too extreme in your renunciation of material life, in both cases, it won't work. So both things have to be there. And this is Rupa Goswami's idea of yukta vairagya, anasaktasya vishayam, yatarham upayunjata, nirbandha krishna sambande, yuktam vairagyam uchate. That we don't take anything for ourselves, but we appreciate everything belongs to Krishna, and we utilize things in a responsible way for the progress of Krishna consciousness. This is the idea here. Of course, it's all for the goal of Krishna consciousness. Very much so. That is actually what it's all about. Yeah. That to culture vidya in this age, one must always hear, chant, and worship with concentrated attention aimed at the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the Transcendentalists. So we're not just becoming, you know, learning etiquette. We're not just trying to be humble. We're not just trying to be tolerant or equipoised. We're doing all these things with the goal of Krishna in mind. So any comments or questions?
I have a mind of people who take these four Vedas.
Yeah.
Does devotee try to present them based on the four Vedas themselves?
Well, if you're going to try, that they tend to be a little bit like the Hindu version of Christians. They're reborn Hindus in a sense. Yeah. So it's not easy to deal with them. But anyway, it's very difficult, actually. The best way to try and convince them is that there are statements in the Upanishads which about Krishna and the position of Krishna, and about the Puranas and how they're valid. They don't actually accept the Upanishads, but they're more ready to they're closer to what they accept than the Puranas. So you may have some chance. Otherwise, there are statements in the four Vedas, some statements, which glorify Krishna. Is that very famous verse Prabhupada comments, quotes it a lot. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pasyanti Suryo Deviva Chakshuratadam Yad Vipraso, what is it? Tad Vipraso Vapanyavo Jagrivamsa Samindate Vishnur Yat Paramam Padam. Yeah, that the devas, the demigods, always have their eyes looking towards the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. But the thing is, because the four Vedas are very materialistic, then it's not easy. It's not easy, actually. But that's one way you could start. There's certain, in the Upanishads, there's the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, for example. There's a Narayan Upanishad, Maha Narayan Upanishad. And these are all Upanishads that are glorifying Krishna. And they're closer to what they accept. Actually, they accept the Samhitas. That's what they accept. That section of the four Vedas. But then the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, they accept as convenient, but the Upanishads not so much. But the Samhitas they accept, because the Samhitas are spoken by Narayan. And the other parts are spoken by different sages. So their point is they only accept what was spoken by Narayan. Yes, Brad?
Right. Based on this could you say that the first one, say, two people come to Krishna consciousness, one has lived a rather sheltered, pious existence, and the other person has made all kinds of efforts to try to enjoy the material world and failed. Based on this verse, would you say that person is better situated because he knows of the material he's
more burnt out,
side by side with knowledge, or the person who has led a more pristine life? But maybe will he become, or she become, more curious,
right,
about material?
Well, there are defects in both cases. Lord Chaitanya says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Yad Richaya Matkatado Jata Shraddhastu Yapuman, something, something, something. Anyone remember the rest of that verse? Na yet. I forget the rest, but he's saying that the yadrichaya, the good fortune, matkatado, of becoming attracted to me, is only possible in people who are not too materially attached and not too materially detached. Yeah. This is how Lord Chaitanya puts it. If someone is too materially attached, too much into sense gratification, it'll be very, very hard. But he also says that if someone is too materially detached, it'll be hard in another way, because he'll be too hard-hearted and, like this, impersonally inclined. So, you know, the problem for someone who is on the pious side is that they may, being in the mode of goodness, they may have a much more optimistic view of material life. And the problem with someone who's more on the burnt out side is they may be too burnt out. Yeah. Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavatam in one place, that if someone gets too burnt out, that being distressed is a type of qualification, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. But if someone gets too distressed, they may become too bewildered. Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, the demigods and the residents of hell. It's hard for both, actually. Because the residents of heaven, if there's too much enjoyment. The residents of hell, it's just too much. It's just too much. They can't get it together. Yeah, so Prabhupada says such overly... just some extreme political philosophy. Yeah. So Lord Chaitanya recommends, or says, like the ideal character person is one who's not too materially attached and not too materially detached.
Sometimes you probably have experience, people on right now, so you have some teenage Gurukul students with you, and often the non-religious will go up to them and say you have a book table or something, just chance the thought. They'll say, well, you're accepting Krishna consciousness, but you haven't even tried this real life. So you really have to, you're saying that Krishna consciousness is so good, but you just read that in the book, or heard it from one of these other devotees, that you should really try out material life, and then you can make a
mature decision. Well, Srila Prabhupada said that you don't need to eat stool to know that it tastes bad. And in fact, in one of the purports that we just sort of went quickly through, Prabhupada makes the point that, or no, maybe it was something else I was reading this morning, that the proper system is that people, they say that, well, it is explained in the Vedas like this, rather than, I've experienced that, you know, and now, so therefore I'm teaching. Prabhupada has made the point there, wherever it was, I forget exactly, that this is actually a more effective way, and it's like the sort of, the best way of education, through hearing from valid authority. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, if it's a matter of experiencing all material life, you know, you'd have to go to the higher planets, for example. You'd have to go to the lower planets. It's really too much. Prabhupada makes the point that we have been through all those things, and the effect has built up within us. This is why a devotee feels, or certain class of person feels, like a natural distaste for material existence. It's because there's like some residual build-up of the effects of many lifetimes of experience of being fried, basically. Yeah. So that a person just spontaneously feels no. Okay, so tomorrow, 12, 13 and 14.